If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe UFC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Trail Radio, episode 552, coming to you on Wednesday, August 14th. We're going to play some buy or sell on the 2024 USC football season. And so much more here on this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Random Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/randomtroy, email address randomtroy@fanside.com, and our phone number 818-643-7227. Second What's Brewing Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Random Troy studio in Los Angeles, Elisa D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back. We are back for another round of preseason pods. Super excited because we're getting closer and closer and closer and closer and closer to the football.
We are. Yeah. We are looking at the next weekends and seeing football on the schedule. USC is not playing in week zero, but Florida State is. And that is, you know, this coming weekend, it's the last weekend without college football.
Yeah, next week is week zero. Thankfully, SC doesn't play in week zero this year. I'm glad. As cool as it would be to have like an early game, like I don't know, week zero. Like, I mean, okay, maybe not. Maybe it's good to have two bye weeks.
I like other teams playing in week zero.
Yeah,
like, because then I get to. We get a little bit of a lead-in week where we don't have to worry about USC playing. We just get to sit there and enjoy somebody else start off the college football season, sort of whet your appetite a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And plus, I think starting on a Sunday afternoon in Las Vegas, the day after everybody else has played, kind of nice. Everyone can tune in to watching USC and LSU on at 4:30 p.m. on September 1st in Vegas. But yeah, a lot of stuff to get to on this episode. Not only is the season coming around, but you know what that means? It's time for a preseason Reign of Troy meetup. We do this just about every year. Always one of our favorite things to do. A few years ago, we were in El Segundo at Rockin' Brews. That was fun. There were like a ton of people that showed up to that thing. We were at Shakey's last year.
A ton of people showed up to that one too.
So yeah, that was fun. This time we're gonna change things up a bit. We're gonna do a preseason tailgate. Yeah, preseason tailgate next Sunday, August 25th, the week before USC and LSU lock horns at Vegas, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. ish. We're just gonna hang out at the park. We're going to be at Woodley Park in Van Nuys. So come over, hang out with us, BYO, whatever. And you can meet special guest Jesse.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice time to have Jesse out there and being able to have her run around while we sort of stand around and sit around and talk about college football. Little Jesse.
That's Jesse from last week. We had some technical difficulties setting up this week's Jesse Cam, but that's Jesse from last week.
Yeah, Jesse's favorite place is the PARK. And so it would be very, very fun if people came out and joined us. We will have more details on the very specific location at Woodley Park as we get closer. But it should be a fun time. Hopefully people can make it out. We understand that the Valley is maybe not the most convenient place for people to come out. But hey, we did Shakey's in the Valley last time and people came out. So this should be a really fun time. And the nice thing about this one is anytime between 11 and 3-ish, whatever afternoon, we'll be hanging out. So if you can't come right at 11, feel free to drop in right, around 2 o'clock and we'll be there. I think we'll be grilling up some burgers and hot dogs and just enjoying the last weekend before college football.
Yeah, it'll be a fun time. We'll put on Twitter and Discord and all those things exactly where we are when the day comes and post that. So be sure that is the thing to keep an eye on. And Alicia, we got a bunch of preseason content coming up, which is next week, the preseason predictions episode, the annual season predictions episode, I guess you can call it. We'll walk through USC schedule, tell you which games are wins, which games are losses, and so much more. That will drop next Wednesday. We're going to go live next Wednesday for that at the normal time. We're moving back to the normal time, 5 p.m. next Wednesday. So mark your calendars, and we'll be on for a super long episode to walk through USC's first ever Big Ten schedule.
Yeah, it's one of our favorite shows of the year. We'll walk through, we'll make our predictions, and we'll see if we're, as this episode is all about buying or selling USC, we're going to have to put our money where our mouth is when we're making season predictions, because we can say we buy in now, but when push comes to shove, we are going to have to say whether or not we think USC is going to win a game or not. So
I think they'll win a game, at least.
I mean,
there's 12 of them.
You would hope. One would hope.
You'd hope that 2008 Washington does not want to be that doesn't mean want to be where SC is this season. But we'll see how everything goes. Alicia, we had a lot to get to, so let's just start with the good old buy or sell, shall we? Let's hit the button.
It's time for buy or sell.
Yeah, there we go. Buy or sell. We're going to start with the USC defense dominating the first scrimmage is a sign of things to come. Lincoln Riley talked about this after the scrimmage over the weekend. He said the defense was sort of all over it. Where do you stand on this?
This is a big sell for me. Not that I'm selling that the defense is going to be improved or anything like that. I would just caution anybody who's getting too excited about these things that are coming out of camp. That number one, defenses are usually ahead of offenses early on in camp. I'm also selling the idea that this reflects poorly on the offense, if that's the conclusion that some are drawing. But I also think that, you know, terrible USC defenses have had really good camps. this is the way that camps go.
Yeah.
You can't, they're zero sum games and you can't really tell which side of that equation any update is on and how much is being oversold or undersold or just the circumstances of it being a practice in the end. So yeah, I'm selling.
Yeah. We've been doing this podcast for a long time and I will tell you every first week of practice, the defense is ahead, like every time,
yes,
every single time. And it's something that we hear, something that we see, all of those things. But keep an eye out on how things progress, certainly. But the defense, certainly, I think, will be improved this season. But will they be dominating from, you know, head to toe just because they started out the first scrimmage ahead? No, that's not going to be evidence of everything else. We're going to have to see what happens first month of the season, right? And go on from there. And the LSU game might not even be the best barometer for how good the defense is and how good that they improved under new defensive coordinator Danton Lynn. So we're going to have to see how that all comes together. Let's go. So that puts me in the cell as well. Just don't put too much stock in the beginning of camp.
The first scrimmage, you can't read anything into it.
Yeah.
Frankly, the only important thing that ever comes out of a scrimmage this early in camp is being injury free coming out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Artist formerly known as Superbrody Jeff Brody says, "Sell. I've been burned too much by positive defensive results in practice." Yeah. Yeah. They basically. And you know, selling here is not like pessimism towards the defense.
No, it's just reality.
Just like, let's just see how things come to be.
Yeah.
See how things come to be for a little bit here. Let's go to the next one. USC's added bulk in the trenches will lead to a major uptick in performance. What say you?
I'm buying this, particularly on the defensive line. I think that USC's defensive line has been undersized by choice for a few years now. And the idea behind that was about being fast, and that sort of makes sense if your speed can create chaos in the backfield. And unfortunately, USC wasn't creating enough of that to justify the smaller sizes of the defensive linemen. I think that the bulking up that we've seen, particularly from the defensive ends, is going to bode extremely well for USC's ability to maintain an edge, to size up physically in the Big Ten. I still have a question about whether or not USC has a player that's capable of being a true, you know, space eating nose tackle. Mm-hmm. This has been a problem for USC basically since Antoine Woods.
Stevie Tuikulamander?
But Stevie T
he literally plugged a gap. In the gap year.
Yes. Yeah. 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 But even he was not necessarily that space eating nose that sort of in a three man front. So I expect Danton Lynn to not even bother with that. I think we're going to see him get a little bit more creative with his fronts. But that's why I think it's even more important that USC has size in those defensive tackle positions, that they've they've conceded that size at defensive tackle. Bear Alexander was far and away the biggest guy that USC has had playing in those spots for a while. And, you know, again, I hate to harp on Stanley T, but Stanley T was playing a lot of minutes for USC in a position in the trenches at 270. That was not fair to him or to USC's defense. And now nobody who's 270 will be playing on that interior line. They're all 290 at worst. So I think that will make a big difference for USC. I'm a buy on this one. And Roger Dodger in the chat says, Don't underestimate the Pepe power. Yeah, I trust me. No one wants Kobe Pepe to succeed more than I do. I have said it in previous episodes. I would love for Kobe Pepe to come out and be that dude, or frankly, anybody to come out and be that dude. But yeah, Kobe looks like somebody with a good chance there. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want to be Mr. Pessimism here. I'm selling the added bulk in the trenches will lead to a major uptick in performance. Maybe if only for semantics. I don't think the added bulk is going to be the direct cause, you know, in terms of like, that's the catalyst for how SC has turned around the trench play is the added bulk. I think that that's one of the things that will be pointed to, but I think that's just a sort of easy thing to point to because it's there. I think there's so much more. There's a lot of more factors involved. How will the technique be? What will the strategy be involved? How will the players have developed? What the talent of have they as it is there more talent? Is there more development? I don't know. I think it's a lot of things at play, and it's just easy to say, oh, they're bigger. That's why they're better. I think it's reductive. I think it's reductive to say that that will be the cause. Is that fair?
Yes, but I do think you're making us a semantic. As Hogie P in the chat says, of course, Michael with the semantics. I do think it's a bit of semantics that you're going up. But like,
I wasn't a lawyer in another life for a reason.
I think you're right in saying that size alone will not make USC's defensive line better. But I think size will help the players that are in there perform better in a defense that is more suited to them at the size that they are going to be.
Yeah. I would buy that part. Let's go to the next one. USC's defense will hold teams to under 27 points per game. The interesting thing is why 27 points per game? Basically, that's sort of like the average of what SC's defense has been doing the last sort of several years. 27 points per game it's not great. It's not amazing. You look in the Big Ten last year at total defense scoring defense, 27 points per game would have ranked 11th in the conference. That's middling at best, right? Like that's not wonderful, but considering where USC was and the Trojans were averaging what 34 points a game last year, that's a whole touchdown better. So buy or sell 27 points as USC's average on defense.
I'm going with the buy. I was going to say the under. I'm buying that USC will hold teams under 27 points per game. And I have two big reasons for that. Number one, that Danton Lynn, when he took over UCLA, he took over a defense that had given up 29 points per game the year before, and when he took over, he got them down to 18.4. Now, 18.4 is almost a full 10 fewer than 27. I don't think that Danton Lynn is going to get USC down to 18 points per game, but I think we can easily split the difference and say that USC will be hopefully in the low 20s points per game. Aside from my belief in Danton Lynn, I think that we have talked about this on a previous episode. USC is going to probably improve their points per game counting stats simply because they are now in the Big Ten, mm-hmm. which does not have the same high powered offenses that that USC will have been facing.
Yeah,
the offenses in the Big Ten are just a little bit slower, a little bit more plodding. Stylistically, it's going to be a bit different, and that's something that you saw with UCLA from the year before Danton Lynn and the year that Danton Lynn took over. One of the things that helped them is they did miss some of the better quarterbacks in the Pac-12 last year. Well, USC, we've talked about this before. USC, the level of quarterback that USC will face this year compared to last year is simply going down a notch. And that alone, the offenses that USC faces, you know, I think you will simply see improvement because the schedule changes the way that it does.
Yeah.
Even the best teams that USC has on their schedule, like Michigan, even if Michigan is a really good football team this year, I think you can expect their scoring average to go down just because of of the breaking in a new quarterback and all of that. LSU scoring average is probably going to go down because Garrett Nussmeier is not, you know, Heisman level Jaden Daniels. So it's one of those things that on one hand, yes, I do think USC will actually improve. And on the other hand, I think circumstances will also contribute to a statistical improvement here.
Yeah, I too am buying. I think when you look at the scoring offenses last year in the Big Ten, there were four teams that averaged more than 27 points per game. Compare that to the Pac-12 last year, there was eight, and there were fewer teams in the Pac-12 than the Big Ten. And even the teams that didn't, UCLA was ninth at 26.5. The Big Ten, you know, the ninth best team in offensive scoring in the Big Ten last year was Indiana at 22.2. That's a big gap. That 4.5 points is a big gap right there. So yeah, I think this is an over for me for all the points that you said. I think SC will be better on defense. I think they might just be 7 points better on defense on a neutral field, whatever, neutral schedule, all those factors. But then you add in the Big Ten side of things, especially when they get a schedule that they don't have to face Ohio State and Oregon. And, you know, I don't think there's any egg on your face for giving up 40 points to those two guys, because
easily the two best offenses in the Big Ten going in.
Yeah, easily. And you don't have to face either one of those. You get Penn State, who has Drew Aller, and their offense was, they're bringing in a new offensive coordinator. They're sort of a big question mark on offense. Maryland averaged 29.7 points per game last year. SC does go to Maryland this year, but breaking a new quarterback, what's that going to mean? They were the team that threw the ball the most last year, and they have to break in a new quarterback. I don't want to just be lazy and just look at returning quarterbacks, because, you know, run game, I think, matters a lot here too. And Michigan's got a great run game. You know, that Donovan Edwards is there. He's going to be in the Heisman preseason Heisman race kind of stuff. So that's going to be somebody to watch, and he can put up scoring that way. But still, SC doesn't have to face Michael Penix and Bo Nix like they did last year. And, you know, they couldn't stop a nosebleed last year, or any sort of bleed last year. So let's go to the next one. What do we got? USC will have a first team all Big Ten player on defense. Kind of spoiled it for you.
Yeah, I'm selling this, and not necessarily because, again, I'm not being pessimistic when I say this. I just struggle to see which player has that kind of profile on USC's defense coming into the season, because, again, this is a little bit of just like media savvy.
Yeah.
Name recognition does matter for these kinds of teams. And a lot of times you have to be well known before. And you need to have a ridiculous outpouring that really just like shoots you up into the stratosphere. Now, could USC have that? Could DeCarlos Nicholson intercept 7 passes and suddenly, you know, he seven interceptions and a pick six, a high profile pick six against Michigan, and suddenly DeCarlos Nicholson is a first team all Big Ten cornerback? Yeah. Could Bear Alexander have, you know, 20 sacks and be all Big Ten? Yes. But I think USC's players can also be collectively very good while having more modest stats and simply not get first team all Big Ten, because, you know, I think there are established Big Ten players mm-hmm. who are coming back or transferring in, like Caleb Downs, who you can already sort of pencil in as those guys. So you need those guys to fall off. You need USC's guys to do something spectacular, and they don't necessarily need to do something spectacular in order for the defense to have gotten significantly better. It's just, it's going to be hard to break into that particular team.
Yeah. I'm selling this for all the reasons that you just said there. Looking at I pulled up the Phil Steele preseason all Big Ten. How many defensive players do you think SC has on all four teams? He does four teams, not just the first team.
Maybe Bear and Ramsey and Arnold, Mascarenhas Arnold.
There's one and it's just Bear.
Okay, see, yeah.
I think for one thing, there's now 18 teams in the conference. That's going to make it harder to get anybody
in
a first team all conference team. But when you add in the named players, like the name brands that are in this conference on defense, like, you know, JTT, you mentioned Caleb Downs.
Well, I just pulled up USA Today's. USA Today also has Bear Alexander as the only representative in their, I think it's probably just receiving votes. Mm-hmm. But you look at this, like, Ohio State needs to have JTT and Tyleek Williams not be great on the defensive line, and I'm not betting on that. Like, Mason Graham is a shoe-in from Michigan. Like I said, Caleb Downs is a shoe-in. Denzel Burke is a shoe-in. Will Johnson is a shoe-in. Like, it's just simply there's too many players already well-established to put this down as a thing that will definitely happen.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. Let's go to the next one. USC will have a 1,000-yard rusher for the first time since 2017. What do you got?
Okay, so I think I would love to buy. I would really love to buy. I would love for Woody Marks to be that guy. That rhymed. Totally not on purpose. But here's my thing. I am highly skeptical of any running back's ability to stay healthy for a full season slate. And in order to get 1,000 rushing yards in a season when we know that Woody Marks is probably going to be the main guy, but Quinton Joyner will get carries, will take some of those carries. And there are other running backs here who could get interesting as well. I just don't trust the health of any running back room to do it. I mean, why is it that USC has not had a running back with 1,000 yards since Ronald Jones?
Yeah,
because Ronald Jones stayed healthy for that entire season, and everybody since, USC has had some good running backs since. I think Keontae Ingram was 89 yards away.
He only played 10 games.
Only in 10 games. Travis Dye also only played 10 games, had 884 yards.
The Buck 16
would have been on track for that, but only played 10 games. Last year, Marshawn Lloyd, again, 820, but he only plays 11 games. Like, this is just the way that it is. You have to assume that your starting running back will miss. I would pencil in 2 games, and those 2 games are going to deny Woody Marks 1,000 yards. Also, because Woody Marks, I think, will be more of his touches will come in the passing game as well than some of those previous.
I'm going to get bold here and say yes. Mm-hmm. I like what I've seen from Woody Marks. I liked last year
Marshawn Lloyd.
And then, of course, Keontae Ingram was great. Like, all those Travis Dye, all those transfers have been great that SC has gotten in the running back room. But none of them have cracked the 1,000-yard mark for the reasons that you pointed out about the injury stuff. I think SC is just sort of due. I think SC is just sort of due. Woody Marks last year, when you look at what he did at Mississippi State, I think he's someone who is versatile and can be involved in the receiving game, like you said. Last year he had, 573 yards. That's not a lot, but I think he's going to have more run this year, especially when SC's backfield, I don't think, is overly proven beyond him, right? Like, yes, there's Quinton Joyner. I think that we think that Quinton Joyner can be pretty good. I think we think that Peterson can be pretty good. But those aren't solidified guys compared to, say, the year before, where there was Austin Jones, who was a known commodity. He what led the Pac-12 in rushing in the COVID year, or whatever it was, touchdowns in the COVID, whatever that stat was at Stanford, right? Like, he was someone who had been around a long time, and we're going to have to see how the running backs can sort of, work alongside Marks and all that. But Marks seems to be the guy right now. And if that holds true, I don't think 1,000 yards is crazy, especially when you're breaking in a new quarterback. I think you're going to have to rely on the run a little bit. And I don't know. Give me the 1,000 yards for Woody Marks. Plus,
a name like Woody Marks, it's so good. Even though Joquavius Marks was good too.
Joquavius, great name. Woody, great name. Woody Marks, put it together. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Marks is a good last name. Like Marks works very well with a lot of different, first names.
Like Carl. This is
my best argument for me. Can you name how many running backs in the Big Ten had 1,000 yards rushing last year?
Just sheer quantity?
How many total in the conference? How many 1,000-yard running backs were there in the conference last year?
Let's go three.
There were two.
Okay.
Blake Corum and Mononongai.
This is the argument for the no here,
now,
right?
Sell. Now, the year before, there were five. So, you know, Penn State, Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, and Minnesota all had five. And the year before that, there were seven. So, like, I don't know that it's a perfect argument, but yeah.
Well, last year as a whole, at least 45 guys had 1,000 yards, and that includes, what, like three quarterbacks, I think, had 1,000 yards?
Yeah.
Last year, too?
Well, and so. Trevion Henderson and Braylon Allen from Ohio State and Wisconsin, respectively, had the same problem that Marshawn Lloyd did. They only played 10 or 11 games. And Blake Corum and Kyle Mononongai, they both played 13 to 15 games. So, like, that does factor in. Can you guys stay healthy?
Yeah. It's a big factor, for sure. Let's get to the next one. Which is, will USC have a first-team All-Big Ten player on offense? What say you about that one?
I say I'm buying this one because I can more easily predict that USC will have a statistical sort of explosion from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure who, as we've talked about, the receiving room is a little bit difficult to pin down. Yep. So I'm not sure who I would predict there, but I feel quite confident that somebody in that receiving room is going to have a hell of a breakout year. I think it very much helps that Zachariah Branch is already a known commodity, a known name. I know we've talked about how he needs to do more from an offensive perspective, but he has that name recognition. So it won't necessarily be easy to break through the favorites at that position from, Oregon's got Evan Stewart coming in. Ohio State has a Buka returning. There are definitely some real heavy hitters in terms of wide receivers in this conference, but I think that USC will have an offense that has the kind of output that could at least contend there. And as Tim in LA says, there is always the chance that Miller Moss has a breakout season as the latest successful quarterback under Lincoln Riley. And that is a surefire way to first team all Big Ten. I think it will be tough to take that title from Dylan Gabriel, but realistically, I think Dylan Gabriel is the main challenger to if I'm speaking of a hypothetical Miller Moss is uber successful sort of, there, he won't necessarily be boxed out by there being too many great quarterbacks in the conference.
Yeah,
at least off the ball.
I am taking the bye too. I think Jonah Monheim. I think it's a guy I think that can certainly do it. Phil Steele has him as a second teamer on the offensive line. I think it'd be interesting to see what happens with Zachariah Branch exactly. I would be shocked if he was a first team All Big Ten wide receiver, just because there's so much competition. The Oregon and Ohio State have two elites, world-class receiving corps. Zachariah Branch, we've talked about before, is a great punt returner, not necessarily a wide receiver. And then you add on the fact of like, who is there a number one at SC? Is it Zachariah Branch? Is it going to be Deuce Robinson? Like, I think there's a lot of questions that I don't necessarily think it will be a skill position guy. I think it will be a lineman. And Monheim is someone who has a lot of preseason hype, so it makes sense and it would track if he has a good season that he could be your first teamer.
Yes, I will say that that's fair, but I also think that it's possible that some of those heavily the heavy competition guys are all on the same teams, like Ohio State and Oregon. Not all of them can eat, and USC's, you know, Lincoln Riley's offense will produce some big numbers. I'm less certain about Ryan Day's offense doing the same for a receiver.
Oregon can
certainly do that, but
I beg to yes, I think there are big numbers that can be had in the Lincoln Riley offense, but we have not seen SC have like big, hugely productive wide receivers under Lincoln Riley. Taj Washington got 1,000 yards last year by a smidge, but Jordan Addison's numbers weren't nationally competitive for best in the country, kind of, you know, leader ranking thing. He missed a couple games at the end of the season. But I think that there's too many guys that there will be a lot of distribution, which will
that's
hurt.
Possible. Yeah, that's certainly
the ability for one of those guys to be an all first team Big Tenner. Phil Steele has Miller Moss's fourth team preseason All Big Ten. So I think that's probably a good spot to put him as it stands now. Things could absolutely change going forward, but where it stands right now, that seems pretty reasonable. Dylan Gabriel, first team, second team, Drew Aller, third is Will Howard, and then fourth is Miller Moss. Let's go to the next one, which is our last buy or sell. USC will be ranked higher than number 23 in the final AP poll. We're going to talk about the AP poll in a few minutes, but the preseason AP poll has the Trojans at number 23 going into the season.
I'm buying this. I don't want to live in a world where this is not true, to be frank. I think that USC will be in a position to be in the top 20 by the end of the season, even if it doesn't go super well. I think that when you look at like final rankings, to be in the top 20, you can still be a 4-loss team and be there. You know, let me see the Tennessee, Kansas State, Louisville, Clemson, all top 20 teams, NC State, top 21, 9-4 teams, 10-4 teams. So mm-hmm. I think that USC, unless things go catastrophically wrong, will be up in that top 20 by the end of the season.
Yeah, that's where I am. I'm going to buy this as well. I think that SC can go, I think they can go 10-4 in that realm, 9-4, whatever it is, whether or not they get to a 14th game or not. I think they can be in that vicinity and be ranked 20th, 21st, whatever it is, to get ahead. I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, SC is going to go to the playoffs just
playoffs?
Yet.
Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
But, you know, I think that that's in the cards if SC has a season in which things go their way and they win the tough games and all that stuff. But, yeah, I would say I will buy strictly for the sense that there's a lot of real estate between the playoff positions and number 23 for SC to land reasonably. I think that's a fair spot there early on in the Big Ten, you know, life. And I think the other thing is, I think the hard schedule is going to earn SC some benefit of the doubt, where even if they went 8-4 or something like that, I think that the hard schedule, if all those teams that they're facing end up being in the top 10, I think that that will earn a lot of people's benefit of the doubt. And, well, you know, they played that really tough Big Ten schedule. You know, they fought hard and all those things.
And that's
start working in ST's favor that never did before.
That's the yes. And that's the eye test thing that comes around. Like USC, you can lose to Michigan at the Big House, and there's no shame in that if you put up a fight. You can lose to Notre Dame, and yes, from a rivalry perspective, that absolutely don't want to see that.
Yeah.
But if you put up a fight and it's a close loss, you're not going to be heavily dropped for losing to a Notre Dame team that is theoretically a top five team, Michigan team that's a theoretically top five team. If yeah. LSU goes on to be special and you took it close, you can find four losses on this schedule for sure. But those four losses don't have to be the kind of thing that makes USC look like an absolute, like fraud or something like that. So eye test will matter there, but also I think USC will be 8-4, 9-3 in a conservative sort of approach to the season.
Yeah. Yeah. We will get more into the weeds on USC's record next week when we do our season preview. But that's buy or sell. Thanks for playing along. We got a bunch of comments that we're playing along. A lot of buys, sells. Trojan Fight said buying that about the final eight people. So a lot of interaction here on YouTube, and we always appreciate it. If you're listening later on, be sure to comment and send us your emails, randomtroyfanside.com. Phone number 818-643-7227. But we're not done, because Lisa, we got a lot to get to when it comes to news and all of that other stuff. Let's get to it. Let's hit the news, shall we? I think that starts with a big breaking news. Big shout out to our friend, our pal, top Trojan fan, Hokie P, whatever you want to call him, coming in the clutch with a huge super chat for each of our three hosts, meaning me, Alicia, and everyone's favorite Jesse. Thank you, man. You're the best.
Yes, and also thank you to Tim in LA for a super chat earlier in the yeah. show to help out with hangout supplies, and we must include treats for Jesse.
There will yes, be treats.
That super chat will make sure that Jesse has a whole big, nice, scrumptious set of like bones or something like that to chew on at the meetup.
A lot of milk bones.
Yes. So thank you to both of you guys. You guys are awesome. Thank you for your continued support of the show. We appreciate you greatly. The super chats are not necessary, but they are extremely appreciated. And we'll make sure that everybody lifts a toast to OGP and Tim in LA for stuff that we've got.
Absolutely. You know. Absolutely. You guys are awesome. We couldn't do this without the support of all the Robbots. We love you guys. But there is a lot of news. Let's get to it. Preseason AP poll is out, like we talked about. SC is number 23. Let's run down the top 25. Number one, Georgia, with 46 first place votes, followed by the Buckeyes of Ohio State, 15 first place votes. Oregon has one first place vote. They're in third. Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, Notre Dame, Penn State, Michigan, and Florida State round out the top 10. Other notable teams in that top 25. Former rival, foe, whatever you want to call them, Utah, 12. LSU, USC's week one opponent, number 13. OU, Lincoln Riley's former stomping grounds, 16. Arizona, SC's former foe in the Pac-12, over at 21. Kansas, 22. Iowa, 25. In the others receiving votes column, a lot of SC opponents this year, Washington, Nebraska, and Wisconsin. You put it all together, SC has seven opponents who received votes. Four ranked teams, number seven, Notre Dame, number eight, Penn State, number nine, Michigan, number 13, LSU. Those are all tough. Four games in the top 13 of the preseason AP is difficult, surely. But then you add Washington, Nebraska, and Wisconsin, ranked 32nd, 35th, and 36th if we, you know, fill out the poll beyond the 25. Lisa, your thoughts?
Yeah, we knew the schedule was going to be difficult. There is some top heaviness to it, but top heavy in a sort of fortunate way, because you'd certainly rather, if you're going to have four opponents ranked in the top 15 of the preseason poll, you'd rather have them ranked 7-13 than 6th-1st. So, you know, take that for a positive on the scheduling front. it's going to be a very, very interesting season, particularly because the Washingtons and Nebraskas and Wisconsins of the world could be good, could be disappointing, could be good. Coin flip one way or another for each of those. So, I think the difficulty of this schedule, the rankings will certainly transform throughout throughout the first month or so of the season. But it's, you know, it's tough. As others, you know, as Cam Hammer in the chat said, you know, I'd rather be 7-5 and in every game than 9-3 and get the doors blown off by LSU, Michigan, and Notre Dame. That's the big thing about these ranked teams that USC faces. I don't think that USC has to, in order to have a legitimate season that shows real progress, USC does not have to beat all of those teams, but they sure as hell can't get blown out by any of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is a difficult schedule, but I don't think it's one that is completely unattainable. As you know, scary as it is to say the SC's got four opponents in the top 13, all of those teams have question marks. SC has a lot of question marks, right? Like, the way going into this season, I think there's really only maybe one team that doesn't have that many question marks, and that's Georgia, just because they're proven they've won two national titles in the last three seasons. Everybody else has some sort of question marks, right? I think that some more so than others. I think Ohio State and Oregon, I think, surely are in the top three and belong to be there. But everyone else beyond that is sort of unproven in some sort of way, right?
Texas, like, has had some really devastating injuries this week in training camp to their running game.
Yeah.
They're dealing with some stuff.
Alabama's got a full new coaching staff.
We don't know what Alabama's going to be.
Ole Miss is Ole Miss.
You know, Mizzou is Mizzou. Like, these could be good teams in the SEC. They also could just fall away because of the difficulty of what they've got in front of them. Penn State, we've talked about, you know, Penn State is Penn State, you know. Notre Dame is Notre Dame too. Like, Notre Dame has been a talented team with a lot of potential for many, many years now, and they haven't really put it all together for a season, even with the transfer quarterbacks that they've had. You know, will it be different this time with Riley Leonard? I think it certainly could be, but I don't know that we can for sure say that it will be. Just like when we look at USC, I think there's a lot of things that could be really positive for USC. I just can't say for sure right now because it's all vibes.
The other thing, I think when you look at the Trojans right now, you look at the schedule, the seven teams that are in the top 36, right? I think it behooves the Trojans that of those seven opponents, two of them are away from the Coliseum. I'm sorry, are true road games. True road games, Michigan and Washington. One of them is in the Eastern time zone, and that game is in September. Washington being a road game, a team that is completely rebuilding itself, and who knows what the hell to expect from them. They get Penn State at home. Penn State, we know, has had trouble winning road games against ranked teams under James Franklin because they're a chalk team. And sometimes, you know, if they're just not favored, or if it's a coin flip, Penn State might lose that game, right? Well, SC might be the foe that gets them there, right? So they're Notre Dame, just as many question marks as SC. Like I said, there's this schedule is scary, but not as scary as it could have been.
Yes.
Which I think gives SC hope going forward. All right, let's go to fall camp news, run through these before we open up the mailbag. Talk about the defensive backs a little bit. There were some tweets from Ryan Karche today. USC DBs coach Doug Belk says USC is currently repping 6 to 7 corners between its first and second team defense. Belk said that he hasn't laid out a specific two deep, instead opting to split the corners into A, B, and C groups and then mixing them up on a daily basis at different positions. Among that group of USC corners, it's Jacoby Covington, DeCarlos Nicholson, John Humphrey, Greeny Vance, Prophet Brown, and Jalen Smith. Belk also complimented the progress of freshman Braylon Conley, Marcellus Williams, and Isaiah Rubin. Belk said he will ideally rotate 8 to 10 defensive backs per week on USC's defense. That is all from Ryan Karche. Lisa, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's nice to hear him explain this, because we had, I think there have been a lot of people asking the question of, Why did USC bring in the transfer DBs that they brought in? It felt like USC's DB group was already very deep, and USC kept trying to add to that group. It makes a lot of sense if Belt comes in and says, no, I want 8 to 10 rolling every game. USC has that kind of depth in theory to work with, and it'll be fun to see what order things shake out in. I really like his approach to the A, B, and C concept, because one of the things that makes projecting this depth chart a little bit difficult, for instance, is there's a lot of versatility there. Yeah. And you can imagine pretty much everybody playing either two of the cornerback spots or the nickelback spot sort of interchangeably. And what it sounds like to me is that by taking these groups the way that they are and having them change around and try out different spots, it's a better way to figure out, like, okay, I think that that Jalen Smith is best suited for that nickelback spot. But maybe Jalen Smith is best suited, and I'm not saying this is the case, but like maybe he actually is best suited for corner, and we'll have Greedy Vance playing nickel, and you know, one of the other guys will take on rotational stuff with the other cornerback spot. I think you can get really creative with this group because of their versatility. So it's nice to hear him sort of explain his approach there, and also the philosophy behind rotating more DBs, keeping them fresh. Mm-hmm. I'm very curious. I think that approach would be extremely valuable in the Pac-12. Belk was in conference is Houston in?
The
American?
The Big 12.
The Big 12. Oh, no. Yeah, they moved it to the Big 12. Were they in the Big 12 last year?
I gotta be honest. The whole world is changing so quickly.
The teams that Houston was facing, like, I think you would face more up-tempo, more pass-heavy teams. So I think it would make sense. What I'm curious of is, is it necessary to be keeping DBs fresh and using an 8 to 10 in the Big 10? Is that necessarily the kind of thing that's strictly necessary? I think we're going to find out this year.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. You talked a lot about the coaches bringing up names unprompted. Well, Lincoln Riley did that earlier this week with Braylon Conley. Lincoln Riley said on the CB room, this is from Luca Evans on Twitter, a lot of depth, a lot of competition. Mentioned true freshman Braylon Conley, a Texas product, wasn't with USC in the spring, said Conley has, quote, really caught some eyes out there.
That's always good to hear. Yeah. Cornerback is a position that I can envision young guys getting early reps in, that you can sort of plug and play a little bit if the guy picks up the playbook and has the mind for it quickly enough. So that is certainly an opportunity that somebody like Braylon Conley can pick up if he keeps it going. It is still, you know, the first couple of weeks of camp. You have to consistently show that over the next 2 weeks, but it's encouraging for sure.
Yeah, 100%. All right, a lot of stuff to get to, more in the mailbag. So let's do it, shall we?
Oh, before
you've got mail.
I already hit the button.
I'm sorry. Before we move to the mailbag, we do need to mention that USC picked up a recruit this week. Very briefly mentioned that Kendarius Reddick, a 4-star safety out of Thomasville, Georgia, committed to USC. The Georgian revolution at USC is in full effect. Again, we will sort of repeat what we have said about the other Georgia products that USC has targeted. It may be difficult to hold on to them. If USC manages to hold on to Reddick and the others, then this class is really starting to shape up. So it's a big pickup. He flipped from UCF.
Yeah, I just looked it up. Thomasville, Georgia is right on that Florida-Georgia line.
USC legitimately might have more commits from the state of Georgia than the state of California right now in this class. So, yeah.
Yeah. University of South Canton. Maybe that's what SC stands for.
Yeah.
Carrollton, Georgia?
Yeah.
South Carrollton? Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. All right. Let's get to the take a quick break for our friends listening to audio only and get to the mailbag right now.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
You've got mail.
All right, Alicia, let's get to the mailbag. We got to start with a voicemail that we got. Super excited for this one. This might be one of the best voicemails we've ever gotten. We got a great one last week from Tony and Denora, PA. This one comes from the 214 area code.
Michael, Alicia, we love the show. I'm just calling to keep the phone line going.
There it is.
That's clutch.
That's what you need. That's a true rot bot. This is what we need. That's a true rot bot.
Throughout the off season, This is what we need. Hell, if you can throw those in during the season if people aren't calling into the rant line consistently. But yes, that's a
big shout out to the 214. Big time. The phone number again, 818-643-7227. Give us your calls onto the rant lane. Let us know what you're thinking. You got questions about buy or sell? You got buy or sell opinions? Whatever it is, fire away. And of course, during game days, fire away with rants.
If you have a prediction for USC's record for our schedule predictions show.
Perfect opportunity.
We will play it. We will throw it in there.
Absolutely. All right. Let's get to the next thing. We got a Slack message from LA Tim. Tim in LA, what's your top pet peeve when watching sports? One of the Rotbots, I forget who, hates get him. My wife hates let's go. For mine, I would say a quarterback throws 10 consecutive completions. He misses one throw and someone exclaims, that guy sucks. Alicia, I take it away with where you're going on this.
Okay, the moment I read this message from Tim in LA, I immediately jumped, my mind jumped to one of my favorite TikToks of all time. Because it has made me into a person that says the thing that that Tim's wife hates, the let's go. And I do it like unironically at this point. It's my favorite thing to react to everything for. And this comes from Benedict Townsend on TikTok.
Great TikTok.
And Michael, I believe we have the audio for the, for the folks at home. To explain why I now am a let's go person.
This is my impression of a 20-year-old American guy experiencing the absolute happiest moment of his life. He has never been this happy in his life previously. He will never be this happy again. This is the absolute peak, the zenith of his time on this planet. Let's go. Let's go.
Let's go. Yeah, we need
add
that
it to the soundboard.
We have it on the soundboard.
Let's go.
That's amazing. Let's go. I do this unironically now. Like and I say it like you got to say it as like unpassionately as possible. Just like, let's go.
What happened when I was a kid? I feel like let's go. Like the emphasis was on sort of let's and go was very staccato. It was very let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. Like it was one of those things. Then all of a sudden it became like, let's go. Let's go. Like when did it become this?
Let's go.
Like when? When did the emphasis become dragging out the go? Is this like a Gen Z thing? Is it an East Coast thing? I don't know. Like, I don't know. Am I crazy? I thought it was like, let's go.
Hey, I can't keep up with the Gen Z slang and all of that.
Because wouldn't
of
it
stuff.
Be like, let's go, person. Blank? Let's go,
let's
man.
Go.
Let's go, baby. Let's something like that.
Yeah.
And then there was Lego for a little bit. Remember
Lego.
That? Yeah. Alicia, I but before I answer mine here, can you please tell the people what you said in our group chat with some friends recently? Your big question about Oregon. How you
oh yeah,
I'm sorry to out you like this.
It's fine. I was on Twitter and somebody, I forget who it was. Was it George Reitster?
Was it Michael James?
Yeah.
I think it was Michael James.
Somebody was asking Michael James and Michael James didn't even know. Why is it SCO Ducks? Like SCO Ducks. What SCO Ducks? It was one of those, I don't know what this means. And at this point, I'm too afraid to ask like that.
It's very clearly let's go Ducks.
Right. But like, couldn't it be SGO like SCO?
It could be SCO, but it's SCO with SCO. Like
it's always been weird to me too, because like one of your rivals is literally SC. Like it's weird. I don't know.
Sure. SCO, it's very Australian, if anything. Like the Aussies shorten everything to like breakfast is brekkie and electrician
Arvo.
Is Sparky and like
Arvo is afternoon.
Yeah, like all those weird things. Like it's very Australian in that sense. But all right,
I need to give my honest answer to this, and it is very niche. So I don't know that it will that others out there have this experience, but. I can say without a doubt that when I was living with my parents and my dad and I would sit down and watch a pretty much full day of college football together, he would control the remote and we would be watching a game, maybe a USC game, maybe not, but we would be watching a game, like a big game. And during the commercials on that game, he'd switch over to another channel to check in on the other games. Mm-hmm. And it stressed me the hell out how long this man would wait to switch back to the game that we were watching. And maybe it was a perfectly reasonable amount of time for him to be flipping channels to find out what was going on with the other channels, but like with the other games. But like when I didn't have control of the remote, I just sat there sweating the whole time. We're going to misplay. Come on, change it back.
No, I'm with you. This is why we have one of those things. Like you grow up and you're able to be an adult and you can spend your money how you want, right? Yeah. Like you can decide, actually, we're going to use the air conditioning.
Yes.
Sorry, boomers. We're going to do it, right? Like one of those things, right? There are very few things in life that like apply to this. One of those is burrito-sized tortillas. I'm going to buy burrito-sized tortillas. I couldn't as a kid, but now I can because it just makes better quesadillas or whatever you want to do. Like you can actually make a burrito with them, right? High quality toilet paper. I'm an adult. I can spend my own money.
Never skimp on the toilet
paper. Yeah. And one of the other things, a secondary TV. In our living room, we have literally two TVs mounted on the wall. And I can never live anywhere where there's fewer than that now.
And quite frankly, I could do with a third.
There could be a third. There could be. How many times are we watching some? Like,
yeah.
Back when the PlayStation was over there, it was great because I'd be, you know, playing video games on the big TV and then watching a movie, watching Netflix, watching YouTube on the other TV. Like, it's so good. And then
if you've ever wondered on a Saturday, if Michael and I have ADD, this is the proof. We are incapable of being a single screen household.
Yeah. And on a game day, it's great. You leave your game there. You mm-hmm. change the secondary.
Yes.
The secondary one can be changed as much as you want.
Major stress relief in my adult life. Yeah. Yes.
I'm going to say my pet peeve for watching sports with others is not arriving there on time. The game start, like we're going to watch this game and the people that you're watching it with arrive in the middle of the first quarter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like the benefit to watching a game at home rather than going to it is you can get there later. Like you don't have to get exactly, you go to a game, you want to get there, you know, an hour or two early. You want to tailgate, you want to walk around unless you're Jake Merrifield. You want to savor in the environments, something like that. You're watching a game at home, you can walk in 5 minutes before kickoff. You know? But when it comes to the you're going to watch the Super Bowl at somebody else's house, be there before kickoff. What are we doing here? What are we doing?
Top Trojan fan
Alicia
is going wild in the super chats.
We got another super chat for a TV for Jesse.
Hey, that's actually true. We could have a third screen in there that exclusively lives on dog TV, so she could just watch squirrels and sheep all day.
Yeah, yeah. Her head just popped up when you said the SQ word.
Yes, she loves the squirrels.
Hokey P, Top Trojan fan, what are you doing, dude? We appreciate you. You're relax. We appreciate you. We love you, man. Cheers. Yeah, you're the best.
And shout out to your youngest.
Yeah, there's 3-year-olds watching with us. So
yes,
we appreciate you. All right, let's go to another longtime Rotbot. We got an email from Judy in South Bend. Mike and Alicia, I'm a Trojan alum from the band too, who lives in South Bend. Yuck, and works at Notre Dame. I can tell you how much fun it is listening to your podcast while walking across campus. You make it feel like home. Hope you have a meetup in Las Vegas. My son and I would love to see you again. We met you at the Texas meetup back in 2018, hoping for a better outcome against the Tigers. Attached is a picture so you can see how you've infiltrated enemy territory. Fight on, Judy, a.k.a. All Madden Mom. We got the picture thrown up here on the YouTubes. Of Judy right there throwing up a fight on in front of the Golden Dome.
You love to see it. Judy, you are one of our favorite Rotbots. Of course, we remember you from the Texas meetup and from Twitter all the time. Love seeing you pop into my mentions. It's always great. Living and doing the Lord's work at Notre Dame with the USC support. Yeah.
I remember the Texas meetup at whatever that sausage place was that we went to. Her son comes up. And
I think her son's name is Michael. If I'm wrong on that, I apologize, but I think it might be.
He could do the entire run, like intro.
Yeah.
It was great. Like, why did my brain go blank? Why can't we just win a game? Which is top Trojan fan. Yeah. All those things. Yeah.
We have a very beautiful base of longtime listeners and supporters, and it is super cool to think, like, that's what's super crazy. Like that meetup, that was 2017. You think about how long ago now that was?
2018.
Think about how long ago that was. It's crazy that we've been doing this long and people have stuck around this long.
2017 was the first Texas game. The game when Sean Beautiful Austin Texas, who's in the chat, you saw him pop in here, where, you know, we helped him go to a game.
Yeah, the Rotbots came together to make sure that Sean got to go to a game at the Coliseum, and USC rolled out the red carpet a little bit for him, and that was like one of my favorite podcasts. That was 7 years ago.
What?
It's crazy, man. So old. It's crazy.
How did this happen? All right. Let's go to some questions that we got here on the old YouTubes. Artist formerly known as Jabroni Jab Brody says, do you believe Colin Cowherd's opinion that Lincoln Riley scaled back the playbook when he realized the O-line wasn't there last year? Also, he said that Caleb looked bored last year.
I'll respond to the Caleb looked bored thing. I think that's a misread of Caleb's demeanor. I think that by transposing this idea that he was bored, you could just as easily point to his demeanor as the thing that they always point out with quarterbacks who don't get too high or too low, who just sort of stay at that middling point, which is what you want from a quarterback. Usually, at least that's what most of the quarterback coaches say. So I don't think bored is the correct way to phrase that, because we know that from a few years of experiencing Caleb's demeanor, that just was Caleb's demeanor. As for scaling back the playbook when he knew the offensive line wasn't there, I mean, I think that's certainly possible. I wouldn't be surprised. I think coaches will adjust depending on what their players can and can't actually execute. And I think that it's probable that they went into some games with certain pages on the playbook unable to be utilized because they didn't have what they needed, whether up front or from the receivers or anything like that. So
yeah.
I don't know about that. I think that's a fair conclusion to draw about the playbook being scaled down a little bit. I don't think it's a fair conclusion to draw about Caleb being bored.
Yeah. There was also a quote. I can't remember where it came from. Something that Lincoln Riley, it might have been at Media Day, where he said something about like how he was happy to get to really, you know, call a bunch of plays this year again or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we talked about this before, but there was, I saw people made the sort of claim that, like, you know, he was unhappy with Caleb Williams running the offense last year. I don't think that's the read of that at all. I think that more so, he gave a lot of responsibility to Caleb Williams. It was his third year in the system. You do that when you get to a veteran quarterback, especially in college football. You give more responsibilities. And I think it was just Lincoln Riley just talking off the cuff about, like, yeah, like I got to be a little, you know, I have to, you know, hold Miller's hand a little bit more or Jaden Maiava's hand, whoever the quarterback is, more because they're going to be a first time starter. So I've got to be, you know, more
micromanage a little bit more.
Yeah, that's all it was. I think it was just a throwaway line there. And I think that this thing kind of feels the same way for me.
Artist formerly known as Jabroni Jabber Brody in the chat said he's a big Caleb guy. He just thought that college was too easy for him last year. I think that it's far more likely to me that Caleb was in a headspace like I have been at times while playing college football 25 on Heisman difficulty when you cannot get a stop on defense.
Yeah.
And you get into the second half and you know that you will never get a stop on defense. And so you just sort of sit back with your head just like this and just go like, all right, let's just get this over with. I think that's far more likely about what was going on with Caleb than like it was too easy or it was bored or anything like that. And I think it was more at a certain point in that season, it became very clear that the defense not only didn't have it, but was actively the worst defense we've all ever seen. And there was nothing Caleb could do about it. So,
But I don't think that there was a lack of effort there either.
No.
Like you look at the Oregon game, like he was, the Oregon game, SC was, you know, getting beat in every aspect, and yet Caleb Williams still grabbed the team by the scruff of the neck and had them within a touchdown in the final, you know, couple of minutes there. Well, right?
He single-handedly won the Arizona game. Like, he single-handedly willed USC to victory. I know that was earlier in the season, but like the dude tried. The dude was doing what he could.
Yeah, 100%. Raul Murdy says, do you think Lincoln Riley will run a balanced offense or be more pass happy in the first Big Ten season? I think the interesting thing here is, and this is my typical reminder that I probably say this too much, that there's so many RPOs in college football, and there's so many RPOs in this offense that I think a lot of it can be skewed that way too. I think that, you know, a lot of people last year wanted SC to run the ball more, and I don't think it was necessarily a lack of running the ball as much as it was Caleb was going to take the chance and throw the 5-yard hitch over handing the ball off and risking the run blocking not being there. And when you're someone who is so confident in their abilities, like Caleb Williams, you're going to take more chances. And I think that sort of led to, like, I would love there to, and you know, maybe Shotgun over at USCFootball.com has the numbers here. I'm be very curious about this, because certainly this is anecdotal, just me talking my ass, but it feels to me like the P in the RPO ended up being so much of a priority for Caleb on those reads, that I think that could change things. And maybe Miller's someone who leans to the R. I don't know. Like, we're going to see how that goes. And I think that will affect things. But I think outside of that, I don't think Lincoln Riley goes into the season saying that he's going to want to change things into whether or not they need to run more or pass more as it is. I think there's just going to be a lot of option plays, and the ratio is going to be ultimately dictated by where are the numbers. Are the numbers on the outside or the inside? And that's going to dictate where the ball goes.
Yeah, and some of that will also change as the season goes on and Riley figures out what his offensive line can give him against some of these bigger Big Ten defensive fronts. He might have to get more pass happy if the matchup in the trenches isn't working out. He might realize that, no, actually, I can run on these dudes and go super balanced, or he might think, you know, he needs to protect Miller Moss and go heavier run, lean towards the run. I think a lot of that will be dependent on what is actually in front of him and what the results are as he sort of goes forward. I think it'll be fluid is sort of my point.
I just pulled up CFP stats. 2017, sort of the zenith of the Lincoln Riley offense at Oklahoma, I would say. Oklahoma led the Big 12 in rush attempts. 2018, they were number two. 2019, they were number one. 2020, they were number three. 2021, they were sixth. But that seems to be an outlier.
That was a weird quarterback year too for them.
Yeah,
And this is a good point. We talk about, we've had conversations about how like there's this misconception about Oregon and what the Oregon offense actually is, and they're actually a power spread and they run the ball and they're very physical up front. There is a misconception of Lincoln Riley's offense because it's labeled an air raid because he comes from Mike Leach's tree. He has always prioritized the run when he's been able to do that.
Yeah.
It's like a power air raid. If you sort of think about it in some sense. So This is not a Mike Leach pass.
Yeah, I think the passing concepts are very air raidy. A lot of, you know, underneath stuff, a lot of trying to get guys into space and all that stuff. But when you look at the run concepts and everything else, like, this is a multiple offense. Like, that, everybody is multiple now. I can't remember where I heard this offseason, but it was something about, like, we need to talk about the death of the spread offense because everyone's multiple now. Everybody's running the same thing, essentially, outside of the academies. There's nobody that is a true air raid. There's no one that's a true whatever anymore because everyone's multiple in some sense. So, yeah, and I think Lincoln Riley can run. Will he run more? Maybe. I think people always want to run more, in part because if you're running more, you're winning the game probably too. Like, that's mm-hmm. the other thing.
That's that. Yeah. Is USC behind and having to be more aggressive in passing?
Top Georgia fan Hokie P says, what year is Prophet Brown in? He's a redshirt junior, year 4. It does feel like he's been around there forever.
I
looked it up. He was in the 2021 recruiting class. So no COVID year bump or anything like that, but year 4, redshirt junior. He's been around plenty. 3-year career has 20 tackles and a PBU, appearing in 26 games with one start, according to SC's media stuff. So
Prophet Brown is such a weird figure, too, because he's had some really promising cameos, but he hasn't really been able to break through. Yeah. And it will be interesting if he gets that opportunity this year.
Yeah.
Feels like things are a little bit more wide open than I expected. In that group. So we'll see from him.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's go to the last question. We got a YouTube comment from Eric. You guys went to USC. Jesse is lying down, not laying down. This from last week, we said that she was laying down. Alicia, I've gone all out here. I didn't go to the OED. Because the OED is a little stuffy, but I went to the M-WD, the Merriam-Webster's dictionary, and I pulled up the word lay. Under the transitive verb definitions for the word lay, number one is to produce or deposit eggs, like, you know, a chicken lays eggs. Number two, it says lie. It does say non-standard, but it says lie. It's literally in the Merriam-Webster dictionary. And this is a great time to mention a dictionary is not a constitution. It is not a book of laws. It's a yearbook of sorts.
It's a living document.
It's a living document that documents how we use the words.
Yes.
Yes. Do I say laying down? Yeah. Shoot me. I say laying down. But guess what? So do a lot of people. So much so that it's literally in the dictionary that lay means lie. And there's also a little, you know, a little thing in the M-WD, lay versus lie usage guide. Since the 14th century, the practice was unremarked until about 1770. Attempts to correct it has been a fixture of schoolbooks ever since. Generations of teachers and critics have succeeded in taming most literary and learned writing, but transitive lay persists, and in familiar speech, it is a bit more common in general prose than one might suspect. Much of the problem lies in the confusion, in the confusing similarity of the principal parts of the two words. Another influence may be a folk belief that lie is for people and lay is for things. Some commentators are ready to abandon the distinction, suggesting that lay is on the rise socially. It is. I agree. But if it does rise to respectability, it's assured to be to do so slowly. Many people have invested effort in learning to keep lie and lay distinct. Eric agrees. Remember that even though many people do use lay for lie, others will judge you unfavorably if you do. That's Eric for us. Yeah.
Yes, we looked at unfavorably. But I 100% agree. Well, basically, what I was about to say is what Hokie P in the chat just said. Look up the definition of communication: flow of information between two or more parties. Meaning, if they understand you, you have communicated.
Yeah.
That is my perspective on this. Yes, the proper way to say some of these words is lie, or there's a million other ones.
It's that, like that we said, irregardless.
Yes, but that's the thing, is like irregardless is not technically, or has not been technically, the way that people use it. But because people use it the way that they do, it becomes part of the language. This is how we get the language that we speak right now. There are a lot of words that you don't even think about that went through this process of worming their way. I'm just thinking about contractions, like cannot and can't. Mm-hmm. Can't was an improper way to say cannot until it became the way that everybody used it. Yeah. And then that's fine. So West Texas Mike says, I love it when Reign of Troy gets into present participles, is what I tune in for. Yeah, this is what we do. But I am a big proponent of, if you are understood, then it is correct enough. Be correct enough. Like, this is one of the things that, as a writer, it's actually very interesting for me, because in my job, I write for a non-traditional news analysis site. And so I can play around with language a little bit. I don't have to be as formal. And if I write a sentence that is technically not grammatically correct, a lot of times I get to sit there and say, like, I know that technically this isn't correct, but I like the way it sounds, so I'm going to roll with it. That's just me. So, yeah.
And then you write the word, and then you're like, let's go.
Yeah. And I can be a stickler for grammar. Like, I do. There are things that I definitely am in my day to day. Yeah. Irregardless is one that I know.
There and there. Misspellings. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, we apologize. Didn't mean to to lay that one on you.
Sorry, Eric, not sorry.
Yeah, but sorry. All right. That's going to wrap up the episode. We'll be back next Wednesday, 5 p.m. Back to the normal time, 5 p.m. 5 p.m. Pacific time, with the season predictions episode, where we walk through the schedule, say who is a win, who is a loss on SC schedule. So be sure to email us, randomtroyfanside.com, and give us your calls, 818-643-7227, and let us know what you think about the schedule as well. Let us know what you think about buy or sell, and until then, we will see you. Remember, meetup, tailgate, Sunday,
Woodley Park.
August 25th, Woodley Park. We'll be there like 11 to 3 or something. So until then, we will see you. See ya.
See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.